Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with self-advocate Nathan Jornt and Meg Cooch, executive director of the Arc of Illinois, on the upcoming summit for self-advocates, Speak Up and Speak Out. But first, disability news for the week of October 1st, 2018. Legislation that aims to help parents with complex medical needs helps parents with kids with complex medical needs is moving closer to passage through Congress. The Advancing Care for Exceptional Kids Act, known as the ACE Kids Act, was approved by the U.S. House of Representatives Energy and Commerce Committee in September. The bill creates a subcategory of children on Medicaid with complex medical conditions defined as affecting two or more systems in the body and causing physical or cognitive impairment. Each child's enhanced pediatric health home, usually a children's hospital, would be reimbursed for coordinating their care inside the hospital and at different specialists, including those across state lines. The ACE Kids Act allows those out-of-state specialists to qualify for Medicaid reimbursement in the child's home state without any additional paperwork. It would also connect the pediatric health homes electronically so the child's health records can be shared more easily among providers. About 500,000 children across the country are believed to have multiple health conditions that place them in the category of medically complex, including many with developmental disabilities like autism, Down syndrome, and cerebral palsy. Most children with complex medical needs are covered by state-funded Medicaid insurance. At least half of children with Down syndrome have additional medical conditions, according to the National Institutes of Health. Most commonly, children with Down syndrome are more likely to be born with heart disease and can go on to develop leukemia, hearing and vision problems, high cholesterol, sleep apnea, celiac disease, and immune disorders, among other conditions. Ashley Heisling is the Director of Government Relations for the National Down Syndrome Society, which supports passage of the bill along with Autism Speaks, the Autism Society, and the March of Dimes. She said, quote, "The ACE Kids Act will improve the process by which children with Down syndrome who participate in the Medicaid program and who also have other complex medical conditions are able to obtain quality care and coordinated treatments," end quote. Because it is relatively rare for a child to require complex care, most children's hospitals do not have a comprehensive staff of specialists for every need, said Dr. Kaufman from the Children's Hospital Association. Without one national list of Medicaid providers, children now undergo repeated X-rays and other unnecessary procedures because of the lack of coordination across hospitals and across states. The legislation is expected to save the government money by reducing hospitalizations and unnecessary procedures. While the bill only covers children on Medicaid, military and private insurers are expected to follow, according to advocates. The bill still needs approval of the full House and Senate, along with a signature from President Donald Trump to be implemented. But children's health care advocates are optimistic that the bill, with its bipartisan support, will pass this year and start improving coordination and communication among providers by 2019. Children registering for school in Florida this year were asked to reveal some history about their mental health. The new requirement is part of a law rushed through the state legislature after the February shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. On registration forms for new students, the state school districts now must ask whether a child has ever been referred for mental health services. Laura Goodhue, who has a 9-year-old son on the autism spectrum and a 10-year-old son who has seen a psychologist, has concerns about how the information will be used. She worries that if her children's mental health history becomes part of their school records, it could be held against them. The question was largely overlooked until parents started filling out school registration forms this summer. It was one sentence in a 105-page school safety bill that contained such controversial measures as increasing the minimum age to buy a gun and arming school employees. Parents expressed concern that the information could fall into the wrong hands and may follow children throughout their education, said Elisa LaPolt, executive director of the Florida chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. LaPolt said, in a perfect world, getting treatment for mental health challenges would be no different than getting medical treatment for a skin rash or a bad cold or a broken leg, but that's not the world we live in right now. There is stigma around mental illness and getting treatment for it, end quote. School districts say counselors will use the information to help Florida students get the services they need. Some districts will share the information only with psychologists and administrators. Others say they will provide access to teachers and front office staff as well. School counselors say they understand the stigma surrounding mental illness. Some say the way the law was written doesn't help. The mental health question was grouped with requirements to report arrests or expulsions. Michelle Cowley, manager of psychological services for Pinellas County Schools, said, quote, I can certainly understand parents having a reaction when they see those questions, sort of, asked back to back, but in order to help students, school officials must first determine who needs mental health services. The process we're trying to develop and everything we're trying to do is just with an eye toward reducing stigma, increasing awareness, and getting students access to more care, end quote. Still, counselors say more parents may support the law once they start to see children getting the counseling they need. In Broward County, where Parkland is located, the district is using part of the $6 million it received to hire 50 staff members, many of them counselors, psychologists, and social workers. The ability to reach students in need could depend on whether parents feel comfortable checking yes on a registration form. And finally, new research suggests that having a child with special needs can be a deterrent to attending religious services, but the likelihood that families participate varied greatly depending on the type of disability. Overall, children with chronic health conditions are 14% more likely to never attend worship services, according to findings published recently in the Journal for the Scientific Study of Religion. But the odds of attendance were strikingly different for certain groups. Children with physical issues like asthma or muscle issues were no less likely to go to religious services than their typically developing peers. The situation changes dramatically when social issues come into play, researchers found. Among those with developmental delays, learning disabilities, and anxiety and conduct issues, 25% never go to religious services. Meanwhile, a third of kids with autism, depression, speech issues, and brain injury stay away. According to Andrew Whitehead, assistant professor of sociology at Clemson University, who conducted the study, quote, I would like to think that this research could serve as a wake-up call to the religious communities in our nation. In many ways, this population is unseen because they never show up, or when they do, they have a negative experience and never return, end quote. Whitehead noted that previous research suggests that 1 in 3 parents of children with disabilities have switched to a new place of worship because they didn't feel included. Whitehead said, quote, every child with a chronic health condition is different, so there's no effective cookie-cutter approach to welcoming them. However, having a system in place where families are seen, heard, and valued will go a long way toward preventing a religious community from becoming yet another bureaucracy these families have to navigate, end quote. And that's the news for this week.
There's nothing complicated about the way we live. We're all here for each other, happy to give, proud of who we are, humble beneath the stars.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Vicki Nicewander, and you are listening to Disability Beat. And I'm very excited today to welcome two guests to my program, Nathan Jornt, who is a self-advocate, who is also a member of the Council on Developmental Disabilities, and Meg Cooch, who is the executive director of the Arc of Illinois, who has been, I think, Meg, you've been on the show at least one other time, have you not?
Correct, Vicki. Thanks for the invitation back.
Sure. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell the listeners a little bit about the Arc?
Sure. Thanks. My name is Meg Cooch. I'm the executive director of the Arc of Illinois. The Arc is a coalition of people with disabilities, families, and community organizations that are to work together to ensure that Illinois becomes a place where people with disabilities can be full participants in communities across the state. We do this through education and training, coordinated advocacy around systems change at the state level and the federal level, as well as with some of our programs that offer information and resources to families, as well as systems navigation and supporting people to get the services they need throughout the state.
And also running the Speak Up and Speak Out Summit, which is what we're here to talk about today. So the ARC certainly does a lot of great work in the state, for sure. I also want to welcome Nathan Jornt. Nathan is a self-advocate. Hello, Nathan. Are you there?
Yes, I sure am. Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay, very good. Now, am I correct in assuming that you are a council member for the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities?
Yes, I am.
And so tell the listeners a little bit about yourself as well.
Well, my name is Nathan Jornt. I live in Pontiac, Illinois. I am a council member of developmental disabilities, and it is awesome.
So have you been to the Speak Up and Speak Out Summit before, Nathan?
Yes, I sure have, and there are lots of things to see and do at Speak Up and Speak Out. There are classes, there are breakouts, there's a DJ, there is a guest speaker, there's food, there's fun. So much to describe.
It is a lot to describe, but hopefully we can do that and let folks know why they might want to register for this conference. So, Meg, why don't you talk a little bit about the structure of the conference this year and let people know what they might expect?
Sure. So the event is being held October 30th and 31st in Springfield at the what was formerly the Hilton is now the Wyndham Hotel. And it's really meant to be kind of in one place. So once you get there, you can stay there for what is extending. It's basically a day and a half, though we're getting longer and longer as these things go because there's so many events and activities that the committee, of which I think Nathan is a part, have planned and want to include. So this year, it's really exciting for people that arrive the day before, the afternoon before, you can register. You can start registering on Monday, October 29th. You can also, that night, we're going to be hosting a movie, the Illinois Network of Independent Livings, among others, is hosting a movie called The Bottom Dollar, discussion about the issues around subminimum wage. So for folks that are coming from farther away and are going to stay overnight on Monday night, please join us for that. And then really Tuesday moves in and kicks off with an amazing keynote speaker, Tia Nellis. She's originally from Illinois and is now in D.C. and working on federal policy and advocacy. And so she's going to be talking about dreaming big and never giving up. We have three rounds of workshops, which includes, I think, 17 options for workshops. And then we have we come together to have a number of different other keynote speakers, including James Kanzler, who's going to be talking about how self-advocacy changed his life, as well as a panel presentation and discussion with two division directors, the Melissa Wright, the director of the Division of Developmental Disabilities, and Quinetta Wade, the director of the Division of Rehabilitation Services. So they'll be talking to us about what services and what opportunities there are in the Division of Developmental Disabilities and with employment in the Division of Rehab Services, and it'll give people an opportunity to really interact and ask questions with the division directors. Those are just a couple of the highlights.
And Nathan, I think I'm willing to guess on this, but what is your favorite part of Speak Up and Speak Out?
Well, my favorite part of Speak Up and Speak Out over the years is when I did a session called Having a Positive Attitude Is Yours Worth Catching?
I can believe that. You certainly have a positive attitude. And so you were on the committee to plan this event, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Do either of you have an idea of how long Speak Up and Speak Out has been a part of the Illinois conference scene?
13 years.
Seriously?
I know it's more than 12. I believe
Wow.
It's 13. And it's thanks to the council. So thank you, Nathan. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Because it's really their support and the council's belief that self-advocates need to get together to network and to connect with each other, to train, and then also to really make sure we're advocating for ourselves, others, and at the systems level, at the state level. So to make sure we have training to ensure that new advocates that come on can continue to keep getting trained and apply those things they learn.
Yeah, it's so critically important for folks with disabilities to be active in politics and to talk to people in power, because otherwise their concerns never get addressed. So it's, yeah, 13 years is a long time, but it's not even long enough yet, right? It's got to keep going for a long time and give people the opportunity to catch up to what other people know about the system in Illinois as well. So talk a little bit about how people, before we run out of time, and we'll come back maybe and talk a little bit more about the keynotes, what are the procedures for people who want to register for the conference and the opportunities for support to do that? So I know that there is a registration fee, but that can be waived at if people request it, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The easiest way to find out more information about the summit is you can either go to our website, thearcofil.org, thearcofil.org/events, or you can call 817-464-1832 or email janet@thearcofil.org. And there are consumer stipends available to be able to cover people's registration and some of their hotel costs. And that's all within the application. You do that application at the same time that you register for the event. And the ARC staff is very quick to let folks know that it's available. I will say the summit for the last few years has always sold out. So if you have not registered yet, please do so as quickly as possible, because we want to make sure to accommodate as many people as possible. But the hotel only can hold about 500 people. And the last couple of years, we've been busting at the seams. So if you're at all interested, please go to our website. You can call the office. They can share information with you, because the summit is really growing and evolving every year thanks to the Speak Up, Speak Out committee. Every year this year, we have more and more about legislative advocacy, and this year voting is a big deal because of the election. So even if you've been before, it's ever-changing, and there's always new things to learn.
But this isn't just for self-advocates, is it?
No, you're totally right that there are staff that come. There are family members that come as well. It's definitely targeted at self-advocates. And this year, you know, the committee really said we want to double down on that. And so every workshop includes a self-advocate as one of the presenters really leading the conversation.
That's great. And I know personally from my experience that my daughter and I have been to every single one. When I asked how long it had been going, I should probably just go home and count the T-shirts, because that's the way you figure it out, right? Everybody gets a T-shirt every year. And so that's always an exciting thing, too. But my daughter would not miss it. There is no way she would miss it, because it is so much fun and she learns so much every time she goes. So
that's great to hear.
Yeah, yeah. And we were at the very, very first one. It was wow. You, I don't know if you were on the even involved with the ARC at that point, Meg, but no. Lester Pritchard, who was the board chair for the council, was a good friend of mine. He was a man with a disability who had a vision for Speak Up and Speak Out. He's the one that got it rolling years ago. And this next October, a year from this month, will be the 10th anniversary of Lester's death. And those people who knew him in the Champaign-Urbana area who were involved with the disability community certainly miss him greatly. But yeah, a man with complete vision and really had a finger on the pulse of what folks with disabilities really need to do in their lives, and especially in the area of self-advocacy. So how has this summit helped you personally, Nathan?
It has helped me immensely.
So what have you done anything specific as a result? Are you more informed about voting? Are you contacting politicians? Or is that how you got involved with the council?
That is kind of hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you what, it's about... Speak Up and Speak Out is about making new friends.
Right. Yeah, because you do meet a lot of new people, and that connecting is a really important piece of it, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So I know Tia Nellis quite well. Tia is an awesome advocate from Illinois, and she's done so much advocacy and a very, very powerful speaker. I don't know too much about the other person that you mentioned. What was his name?
James Kanzler.
And what's his background?
So he actually has been involved with the Alliance Ambassador Program. And so he's going to be talking a little bit about his experience from being a person with a disability and then who wasn't very involved in self-advocacy to connecting with the Self-Advocacy Alliance, and then going to the Alliance's Ambassador Program, which is, I think, almost a year-long program. It's an intensive to really train folks to be able to speak and to be able to lead in policy arenas and on boards and in other places to be able to speak up for themselves and others. And so he's going to be able to share his journey of maybe not being as strong of an advocate and becoming really one of the leaders in the Alliance and in the self-advocacy program. We're also going to be having as another keynote round of keynote speakers is actually a series of four individuals who are transition mentors through the ARC of Illinois. And they're all folks that it's Susan O'Connor, Robert Peterson, Bob Peterson, John Porter, and Robert Rowley, who had all previously lived in institutions and state operated centers and have all been living in the community now. And they're going to talk about that experience and what it was like in both places and how they can really support people who are interested in living more independently on their own and in the community. So they're going to really be telling their stories as well from an Illinois perspective.
I know there's always a lot of information about you know, where you live and how you live, and also about employment as a concept. Is there anything kind of unusual that's being offered this year?
Let's see. This year, we have a couple of things that are kind of policy related. We have one that's going to be, it is related to employment, but really talking about how to build that relationship with your legislator.
Mm-hmm.
We're also having three self-advocates who are going to be sharing their experience with their projects that they did through the Partners in Policymaking program. They participated in an 8-month-long training program about public policy, and they're going to talk about their experiences there. We're going to also have some self-advocates that talk about working with their support staff and making the most of that, as well as we always have, this year we're going to have self-advocates in sexuality and a number of different program workshops around sexual rights and knowing and making sure there's sexual safety as well. And then we have a couple of, Nathan mentioned his around attitude. We also have Gary Richards talking about making changes for success, so how you can really, change your own life. And we're going to be talking about voting and making sure that people really understand how voting is important and how you should really be able to speak up for yourself and your community that way. And then finally about ending bullying. So both as talking about it from an individual perspective as well as how we can support others to make sure that we really stop this crisis in bullying.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. So I think probably we need to give the information, the specifics about how people can learn more about the Speak Up and Speak Out Summit first, and then I'll give you a moment just to say to the listeners whatever else they need to know about the summit. So Meg, why don't you give the specifics first? And I don't think we said where it was, so that might be a good thing to add.
It is. So it's going to be in Springfield at the Wyndham City Center, which is formerly the Hilton Hotel, and the actual dates are the 30th and 31st, the 29th, people can come down. And as I said, there's going to be a pre-movie, and then there are some folks that are going to be going and doing a Capitol tour. So really the 29th and the 31st of October. You can call 815-464-1832, or you can check it out on our website, thearcofil.org. Sorry, thearcofil.org. /events.
Great. Thank you so much. And last words, Meg, what did you not get to say that you'd like to about this event?
It's the most exciting event, I swear, that we have in the year. It's the most fun. And we're amping it up even more this year by really, really trying to focus on kind of from soup to nuts, from the beginning to the end, advocacy, getting involved, networking, training. We're going to have a video booth and there's a photo booth. It's a great opportunity both for individuals to connect with people and to really grow so they can speak up and speak out for themselves and others.
Great. Thank you. And Nathan, what do you have to say about Speak Up and Speak Out before we're done today?
Speak Up and Speak Out is unlike anything you have ever seen or experienced before.
And go, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll see y'all there. It's a great event, so we're looking forward to it for sure. Thanks so much to both of you for joining the show today. It was great talking to you.
Thanks so much, Vicki.
Thank you.
All right. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/publicaffairs/disabilitybeat. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
Dragging me down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down. Pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground.
And you are tuned to to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Before we get started with Rootstock Radio, one announcement, and that is the Art Theater listing for this week. Playing daily is The Wife, which showcases an outstanding performance by Glenn Close. The film also features Glenn Close's real-life daughter playing a younger version of the same character. This is a great screenplay adaptation of the novel about a Nobel Prize winner with a wife who has a few surprises in store for him. Wednesday, October 3rd brings the opening of this year's Shocktober Festival. Join the art for an evening of curated horror, science fiction, and dark thrillers from all over the world. The evening starts at 5 p.m.